If you have ever lived west of the Rockies especially, you know how many Western Canadians feel like they're in a different world and not really a part of the fabric of Canada. This creates a different perspective and has given rise to several political parties as a result, the legacies of which continue today. The United Party of Canada is a party rising from the West that seeks to fill some of the conservative territory on the political spectrum that the PPC and the centrist parties also seem to be vying for. Are they the same, but different? My guest today will tell us how the party he leads stands out from the others. My name is Steve Ray. Grant Abraham is the leader of the United Party of Canada and is running to be your MP in Durham after the March 4th by-election. On this episode of Exit 425, Grant tells us why. Grant, thank you for meeting me at Exit 425. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Well, thank you, Steve. It's nice to be here. It's nice to be in the beautiful constituency of Durham. I love the rolling hills and the farmland. I'm not a native of the area, but I think it's a pivotal anchor point in Canada right now in relation to our political discussion and the tapestry in our nation, politically, including Western Canada. And when I talk about Western Canada, I talk about west of the Manitoba border.
And that's fair. Why you? Why now? You're seeking to replace Aaron O'Toole as the MP for Durham. Who are you and what are you personally bringing to the table?
Well, I'm in this election in Durham right now because I watched with the rest of Canada what the Durham constituency produced in Aaron O'Toole becoming the leader of the Conservative Party. And I saw an advocacy for someone becoming a true blue leader. And what we saw when he ran in an election was something much less than that. I think it left conservatism in Canada feeling incredibly misled, even betrayed. And when you look in Canada now at the significant issues that we have in terms of the mistrust of government of whatever color, when you look at the regionalization that's going on in our country and the sentiment in Western Canada in terms of fatigue with being a colony of a colony, we are at a breaking point in relation to our national discussion where it may be easy for people in Ontario to be glib about how the West feels, but they are an engine and they are consistently overlooked in relation to the real power that they're bringing to the country more than the subsidies that are coming to Ontario and Quebec. And so it's convenient, I think, in many ways not to listen to this conversation because when the money flows, why would you bother? But I think that we are coming to a point where there's fracture lines. And if you watch what's coming out of Western Canada closely, you will see that these are becoming louder and stronger. And even in some of the policies of Premier Smith and Premier Moe from Alberta and Saskatchewan. So we have set this party up. There's many people in Western Canada, but interestingly, the sentiment of this party and the perspective of this party is actually a fiscal conservative party that finds that balance, finds that symbiosis, if you will, with social conservative values in a legitimate way, because we believe that social conservatives inside the Conservative Party are akin to, analogous to, abuse victims who are being used for their vote, but who never actually get their value interests advanced, even though that's what the party's supposed to do. And I'm suggesting to social conservatives, the social conservative Christian right across Canada, that they have Stockholm syndrome. And when they actually look and see that that's the case and that these values are what this nation actually needs to be talking about on a federal level, that they will change their perspective and actually re-engage with the real value discussions, that the bedrock value discussion framework that built this nation. And so I believe that while I'm not from Durham riding, this is a completely relevant proposition for conservative centrist thinkers in Ontario because we are a part of a great nation. We want our nation to be great. And I want Canada to be a federal country. I don't want to see it partitioned. But unless we actually start to have these conversations and Ontarians understand this, we will continue to see the kind of fragmentation that we've seen. And so I think one of these conversations, and this is a long answer, is that there is massive disgruntlement with the Liberal Trudeau government. And there's a growing dissatisfaction with what the Conservative Party and Mr. Poilievre is not saying. And for me, a lot of what I think we need to see and talk about is embedded in that tension between what the Liberals are doing and what the Conservatives are not talking about. And this is immensely relevant for the people in the Durham constituency.
The United Party of Canada is new to many of us. And why UP versus Conservative? You've already outlined a little bit of that. Liberals, NDP, Green, PPCs, and there's others and other independents in Durham that are running. But maybe you could address that a little bit more in terms of the differences between those the parties. And you've already started with the difference between United Party of Canada and the Conservative Party of Canada. Is there a danger in electing an MP that doesn't represent the governing party? And I guess you're kind of working through the question of why you didn't run as a Liberal or a Conservative.
Well, I think that the real question is, what are we voting for right now in Canada? Are we voting for what we want? Or are we voting to keep Justin Trudeau out? And that is a deep, dark question for a lot of voters right now, because there's not a strong satisfaction with the Conservative Party. But let's maybe just wade into this from the perspective that I'm approaching it. I see over the last 8 years, a Liberal government leader, Justin Trudeau, who has told Canada that Canada will become the first post-nation state. He's told Canada that COVID will provide an opportunity for a reset of Canada. We have seen rampant acts of foreign interference in our nation that the Liberal government was aware of and wasn't engaging, that the Conservative government was aware of and not engaging. And these suggested changes to our nation are the changes that ultimately leave so many of us in Canada wondering what's happened to our country and, you know, where is our country gone. And so I have a lot of patience for Canadians when we start to discuss this discussion about what a post-nation state is, because no one really knows what that means. I think the starting point and the short answer for that is that is why the UK left the European Union, because they could see that there were forces outside the country that were determining how their country felt, what the culture of their country was becoming, how their money was being spent, what some of the policies were for their healthcare, and what was happening to their borders. And that was a monumental decision in the world, actually, in terms of Britain leaving the European Union. And this is the same discussion, I believe, that the Liberals are having with Canada, except they never told anybody in Canada in any of their elections that they were going to try and change the sovereignty status of our nation. That's significant for everyday Canadians, because when you set up a post-nation state model, it makes the chain that the electorate can tug if they don't like their politician so long, with the governor so far away, that if the local electorate tugs it or pulls on it, the energy of their tug is lost and there's no effective governance and connection with the people. So when I look at that, I see a Liberal government that is moving our decision-making authority away from our elected officials to somewhere else by someone else that we don't elect. And that's just reality. If you want to look at it in the context of the UN, the WHO in relation to health decisions in the event there's another pandemic, these are decisions that are being made somewhere else. And no one in Canada signed up for this radical value change. This it's actually a constitutional reform by statute, because we want to be able to control those decisions and be able to talk to the officials that are making those decisions, not have treaties bind us. Same with the reset. The reset, COVID's provided us with an opportunity for a reset. Well, what does a reset mean? We're seeing that in relation to this post-nation state discussion. We're seeing it in relation to the treaty issues that I've kind of just outlined in the brevity of time that we have in this interview. But why aren't we talking about that? We're seeing the implications of it. We're seeing changes happen to core values in this nation in terms of control of land, control of our wealth in relation to how we understand what prosperity is. And we are seeing the bleeding in of a new value system that we have never agreed to and never have signed up for, called Agenda 2030. And it's coming at a provincial level, it's coming at municipal levels, and it's changing how our elected governments are actually being guided in relation to the control of the assets that we know and understand in this nation and how we function alongside them. And I mean land and water and the environment and how people live and function. And the 15-minute cities that you're seeing advancing is part of that agenda. The shifting of agricultural land into land that people can't actually farm on, other than maybe growing pod or something like that, are changes that are coming that are making deep and significant changes to our nation. And so these are federal issues. These are issues that Canadians never saw coming, probably never understood. And the only thing that I can give Justin Trudeau credit for is the fact that he told us that that's what he's doing. My biggest criticism is that the Conservative Party has never asked those questions in three elections and three leadership races. And if they're supposed to be the loyal opposition standing up for the people and actually wanting to get into power, why would they not ask those questions? Have you ever heard those questions asked anywhere? Ever? Why not? So I know you're interviewing me. I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I'm just saying, these are huge issues that affect everything from, like we were talking about before the show, local parks, land allocation, the environment, how we work, what is actually sacrificed as a value for other things. And it is a radical departure from the value framework, the bedrock value framework that built this nation. So I don't even bother talking about the NDP. I don't even bother talking about the Liberal government, because I see them making these changes. I'm really having this conversation with Canadians that are coming from a centrist perspective, right? And saying, we cannot keep doing the same thing in Canada with a party that is not actually championing the real issues that are making sea changes to our nation. And, you know, when I look at Durham, I just can't believe that, or how people must feel in terms of electing an MP that became the leader of the party, advocating true blue. And when they went to an election, they shifted so far left that no one could identify the party. The nation felt betrayed. And I think this is an amazing starting point to actually have this conversation with the constituents that probably may feel, betrayed or embarrassed for what's happened in terms of the conservatism narrative. And so I think we need to have these conversations. They're not being had within the party. The party's not doing interviews. Pierre Poilievre is only talking about more money in your pocket or bringing more groceries home or house prices. He's not talking about these sea change issues. He is telling his MPs not to discuss value issues that the Alberta government is putting in place in terms of protecting health decisions of health and, well, what? Parental authority issues in relation to kids trying to gender transition before they're 18. Like, we really need to ask why it is we're not talking about the much bigger issues that are changing our country. That's why the party's here, in addition to being fiscally conservative, in addition to wanting to see Canadians thrive. I want to see our country return to strength, and I want to see our freedom secured. And we do this by talking about truth, justice, freedom, and returning uprightness to our actual nation and getting rid of this graft that is causing so much trouble in our nation. Anyway, there's my answer. I don't know if that answers your question. I don't actually engage with a big discussion about NDP or liberal policies.
What are some of the unique Durham issues that you've become aware of that you intend to work to resolve?
Well, driving down the 401 yesterday, driving east, I was really appreciating the natural beauty of the area. And I kind of wonder why probably one of the most beautiful greenscapes that Ontario has going for it, at least in southern Ontario, is the lakeshore and the beautiful vista and the rolling hills, and why we are building what huge box supply centers, supply and distribution centers, and we have a screaming freeway down the middle of it. And I understand the development of the province, and I know why the 401's there and all that. But I do think that's an area of natural beauty. I think it needs to be protected. I probably think that unless there's some decisions taken provincially about the park, which you and I were talking about, and I like to see natural beauty. There's all kinds of places to put ugly buildings in for commercial enterprise and kind of, you know, brown spaces. But right on the most beautiful part of southern Ontario, I think that needs thought. I think it's also driving around in the constituency. I can see that there are a lot of roadworks, traffic, construction issues. And I also have driven on the 407 as a toll road. And I'm wondering why the provincial government just doesn't take the tolls off and let people have an expedited life given all the roadworks that are given on. So those are things that I see. I'm sure there's a plethora of other issues within the riding. I don't presume to hold myself out as being from Durham. I think there's great value in living in and being a part of the riding. But I also think that this riding is a flashpoint for Canada that needs to start this bigger conversation, because we can talk about the things that are impacting our local curb, like green spaces and parks. But if we are having an eroding understanding of freedom and our rights and the values that built this country, what good is the issues of worrying about, you know, how big a park is or whether there's buildings in place? And a lot of Canadians are asking those questions when they see what happened to the strength of our charter rights during the pandemic. A lot of Canadians are looking and saying, how did we end up with a government that's actually seizing individuals' accounts? We have mixed understandings from Paul Rouleau and from federal court judges about the invocation of the Emergencies Act. Those all have to do with the fundamentals of what we understand freedom and liberty to be in this nation, and it's being redefined before our eyes. So whatever you want to talk about there, I'd love to, whether it's freedom of religion or the primacy of parental authority. These are things that are preeminent issues, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't talk about greenscapes and all that, because I love it. And I'm saying that was my observation driving down the road. What can we do to fix that? And I think we need to rethink that and, you know, acquire uglier ground to put commercial distribution centers and not waste beautiful ground. And that's just obvious. But I'm also worried about the very fiber of our nation and what is happening, because we and the legacy parties are not having the conversation. And to one of your other questions, I think that you're asking, and maybe you're nudging at, is how does a small party influence these agendas and issues? And I think it's fair to say we're a small party because we've just started and we're running in a by-election. But it's a party that is capturing the expression of Canadians across the country. And it doesn't take very long to analyze what Justin Trudeau has done in this country with a minority government, with the NDP sitting with only a few seats, shaping the policy of a Liberal government that's gone run wild. So I actually think that a few seats starting out can shape policy in an amplified way, way beyond the number of those seats. And I think Canada is missing these discussions. We must have them. We must have them probatively.
And there's a lot of business that gets done, you know, behind the green curtain and in offices and out of the view of cameras. Someone recently told me that if the media and not the speaker were in charge of the cameras in the House of Commons, there'd be a lot more business getting done and a lot better decorum. But most of the work, the real work in Parliament is done out of the view of cameras. And that's where even a small presence in the House of Commons can have a huge impact. And, you know, as you pointed out, sometimes a few seats carry a tremendous amount of weight. And it all starts with a little bit. Missed opportunities at getting a party started could be losing opportunities down the road. So,
well, and it begs the question for Canadians, and the citizens in Durham constituency are the flashpoint now in the country, because the issue is, you know, I've been out on the streets and I've talked to people, and what I hear are Liberals telling me that they're fed up with Justin Trudeau and that they're kind of thinking about holding their nose and voting for Conservatives. And I hear Conservatives telling me that they're not totally happy with what they're seeing within the Conservative Party because of what they're not seeing, but they need to get rid of Justin Trudeau. And we have had now generations of Canadians who have done muscle knee-jerk in relation to voting, and I would have been one of them. My family would have been a Conservative Party supporting, or whatever iteration of it was in the last 40 years, supporting family. But I'm looking now and I can no longer just kind of go along to get along with what the trajectory of the Conservative Party is, because they've made decisions that I think are offensive to value systems in Canadian culture. And by that, I mean Bill C-4. I don't know if you're familiar with Bill C-4, but that's a conversion therapy bill. That bill seeks to criminalize and incarcerate parents or counselors or pastors for talking to or praying or counseling their kids about not commencing conversion therapy. That bill was passed unanimously by the current conservative MPs. And it does not rest easily across Canada, because I know I've just finished a book tour on a book that I've finished in 2023 called The Battle for the Soul of Canada, Firing the Forge. And I have traveled from Vancouver Island right across the country talking to Canadians about these exact issues. And I can see that there is a huge disgruntlement and there's a willingness across the nation to actually look at the political landscape differently. We just haven't had a policy presentation that has been presented to Canadians where they can actually see we are going to get a fiscal conservative response and we're going to have an honest conversation about these social conservative values in the country. And the other part of this discussion, I think also for your viewers and listeners in the Durham riding, is that there's a lot of Canadians that are orphans now politically. They've given up on the system, or they're disgruntled with the Conservative Party. And I'm talking about center and center right here. And they're wanting to see change, but they don't know what to do. They see the PPC as something that is maybe not going to be a driving force or is a spent force. And I say that with respect to Maxime Bernier, because I think he's been a leader on the freedom front. But I think the discussion's moved on in Canada just from freedom alone. There are these other value discussions going on, and it's embedded in now Western regionalism, which Canada is going to have to grapple with if we want to hold this country together properly. And I want to see it held together, but we can't continue with equalization payments the way they're structured. And there's got to be reform in terms of our election and how we elect our national leaders. So this probably aren't issues that really can Ontarians think about because they're the beneficiaries of those issues. But I'll tell you, if Western Canada moves into a position where they form an opinion to separate, the cost to Central Canada will go up, and it will impact provincial governments and municipal governments, and you will feel it. And it's time that Canada stops being a colony, and that Western Canada stops being a colony of that colony. We need to engage our constitutional issues because they have shown themselves to be broken.
I remember after he won the leadership, soon to be at that point Prime Minister Chrétien was asked about what Canadians could do. He encouraged people to travel, and a lot of negative comments from the media about that. But I think there's a lot of wisdom in that because so many of us, we live our lives out in one small part of the country, and we don't see or understand really what other people are going through. And that very well could change our opinion of political parties, politics in general, if we worked to understand, as you said, the Western Canadian perspective, the perspective of someone living in north central Quebec, people living in Ontario, for those who are in Quebec, and the Maritimes. There's some very distinct areas in Canada and very distinct cultures, and if people could understand that, they might understand some of the things that you're talking about a lot better, and would appreciate what they have or don't have. And you're right. I mean, the world kind of revolves around Central Canada, and so we don't really understand what other parts of the country are going through, and that's a challenge.
Yeah. Well, it has revolved around Central Canada, and I think that when you look at the engines from Western Canada that are supporting the revolving around Central Canada, then you start to see that tension, especially when you have Central Canadians that talk about the environment and think that all we need to do is turn off the energy sector, and then when you really look deeper, we've got coal being sold to all the carbon output countries in the world, and we produce 1.6 of carbon output in the world, and now we're shutting down our energy sector, which is actually clean energy, so that we cannot produce it. We pay a tax not to produce it, and we're selling those like for instance, in the example of coal, we're selling coal overseas, and it's being burnt in other countries, polluting the environment. So it's we're just offsetting that carbon. We would be much better just developing industry that would actually help to create clean energy that works, and get real about what the world's demands are. This battery produced energy, this clean energy as it's touted, isn't working, and that's why you see all the rental car companies dropping the various different vehicles that are battery operated, because you have any extremes of heat or cold, they'd stop working, and it costs as much as the car to replace the battery. And don't even get me started on the strip mining that it takes to produce those batteries. So, we've got to, as a nation, start digging deeper into these discussions and not just listening to 12-second clips about having a greener Canada. We can have a green Canada. We can steward our environment. We can ensure that we're not polluting our children or grandchildren's future. But by shutting down the engines that can actually build this country and create clean energy that the nation desperately needs, we're shooting ourselves in the foot. And this shutting down, the simple ideological framework of we need to have clean energy, let's shut down Alberta's energy systems, is going to drive this regionalization. And we need to wake up to that we're still going to be functioning on hydrocarbons for quite a while. Europe has taught us who started this green energy model 20 years before we did, that they have not replaced the hydrocarbon dependence for their energy systems with green energy. And that is why they're politically straddled now with buying energy from Russia, because they haven't been able to replace it with green energy. So I think there's got to be scope for development of it. I love the concept of clean energy, but we also have to continue to build our infrastructure, our economies, and that is going to help us deal with the housing shortage and the house prices issues and everything else. But what I think Canadians need is not just to be told, "Oh, we have a housing crisis. You don't have enough money in your pocket," and actually not get into the deeper issues. And this is why I'm in Durham. This is why I'm in Ontario, because I see Ontarians that love this country. They resonate with conservative values, and they want to see this country prosperous, strong, free. And we need to have these conversations just like you're doing here. And so that's why I'm delighted to be on the show and get to share with you. We're going to be running several events around the riding in the next 2 or 3 weeks where people can come out, their town halls. And I'm going to be posting those on my Facebook page, Instagram page, and on our website, which is upcanada.org. And you can check out exactly what it is I'm saying that Canada needs and where we need to go in terms of starting with returning to the bedrock values that built the country. There's an outline of policies there in terms of a perspective of different policies that are live now. And the biggest thing is that I think we have these conversations. We've got to have these real conversations. So I've set up, I think right now there's 6 or 7 town halls scheduled across the riding where people can come out from any perspective and hear what I have to say, and they can ask me questions. I always have an open mic in my meetings. I don't just do scripted, you know, verbal downloads and then say thank you very much and send everyone home. I always have these conversations because I think that's the kind of accountability we want to see from our politicians. And I think it's the place that actual conversations, real conversations happen, so that we can get our minds around these different perspectives and see that it's not just, you know, ideological warfare, that it's actually people with hearts that feel things. And that's what Canada needs. That's how we're going to unite, not by just, you know, doing a speech and walking off the stage. I want to engage. I have these conversations, this is how this party actually started, Steve, because I was so frustrated with what the Conservative Party was doing. I ran for the leadership of it in 2022. And when I spoke in Western Canada, primarily for that leadership race, I just saw tons of Canadians that were so frustrated and so refreshed with actually having the real conversations that are going on in the country. And that was the genesis. That was the seedbed of the birthing of this party. It's from conservative people who are just disgruntled with what we're not doing within conservatism.
And that's, you know, something that I think a lot of people around here feel, that there's, you know, a need for change, but not liking the choices necessarily. And certainly the discussion we're having, something that I'm talking about because of the fact that with two, like a provincial and a federal election now, and two different conservative candidates who didn't want to talk to anybody about the election, even though this is a great channel for doing that. And I guess I'm part of the media, but I try to do things different, because all the media is the way to get the message from one person to another. So, you know, my goal here is to do that as directly as possible, to give you a voice, give you a forum, a podium, and to let people hear you directly. And I'm not about to try to change that message, but if I can't get a message out of a candidate or a politician, I have no message to deliver except what I'm seeing. And that's a lack of conversation. And that leads to my last question. And certainly the Prime Minister tried to call Pierre Poilievre and Jamil Giovanni out at a recent caucus meeting and talked about how it's important and how his candidate, he claimed, would be the voice of Durham to the Parliament. And I don't have a voice from the Conservative Party of Canada. And so what are your thoughts about the difference between representing the riding to Parliament or about representing or selling the party to the riding, which seems to be what we're getting now?
Yeah, well, this is a big theme right across the nation, and this is also relevant in Durham. And I think that if people in Durham understand that question, what you're really asking is, are we going to have political parties? Like when we grew up in this country, we had MPs in our homes, wherever it was. I'm sure you did, I did, where they were kind of like the uncle or aunts in the community, and their office was open. And if there were issues that were going on, they were a conduit into the party, into policy. They were like an early warning system for what was going on in their constituency, and people could go and talk to them. And, you know, I'm sure 80% of their questions were either municipal questions or provincial questions, but they could be activated as guides. They worked within the communities. And in that Canada, we had a grassroots involvement with our MPs. And we'd see them, you know, out for lunch, and they're part of the community. And I'm not saying they're not a part of the community now. I know this is the case, what we're talking about now, because I sat on a conservative EDA in Canada, and I knew, and I could see that as the grassroots was kind of pushed stuff up into the party, there was the EDA acted as a membrane to actually keep it down. And what actually was happening was the party was feeding the policy down into the EDA and pushing it into the grassroots. And there was like an inverted flow as to how our leadership is supposed to work in terms of each and every community and constituency. That's a major deal. And this is why I believe people aren't engaging to have conversations like this, because there's too much to risk by saying something wrong and then having it blown up or violating another party agenda that is a softly spoken thing that no one wants to talk about because it has too many landmines. And, you know, this approach, this curating an election or electioneering versus actually having honest conversations is a race to the bottom. And that is why I say that the Conservative Party of Canada is leading Canadians over a cliff just slightly slower than the Liberals are on these issues. We don't want to have our nation reset. We don't want to have global governance of our people in the event that there's another pandemic. I want to have my provincial health department be controlled by the Premier's office and actually make decisions that are sensible for myself and my children and my grandchildren. And so these are the most significant issues of discussion in the nation. And I'm blown away that Leslyn Lewis is out there trying to sign a petition so that Canada is leaving the UN. I think she's right, but there's the Conservative Party is ignoring it, and Pierre Poilievre's not commenting on it. And I still haven't heard which MP, if there is one, that's actually signed that petition. And it's a perfectly sensible thing to do. And so the UN was a great thing. Canada set it up. It was a noble idea, but it's changed. And we've got to come to terms with that fact. Why do we have a whole room full of conservative MPs applauding a Nazi and not resigning? You know, I don't know. My family fought in World War II. I had an uncle that died. I had several uncles that fought. What's going on? And so no one wants to talk about Bill C-4. No one wants to talk about Mr. Yunka, if that's how you pronounce his name, and why that why that person was in our parliament building and why conservative MPs were clapping. I kind of guess why liberal MPs and the NTP were clapping, because it kind of fits in with their whole idea of post-nationalism and control without democratic accountability. But why are the conservatives doing that? So we've got huge issues, huge issues, and we need to talk about them. And I'm sure the established party, conservative party, is not going to want to talk about this. But if we don't, we're going to lose our country.
Any final thoughts to wrap up in a minute or so?
No, I think it's just I welcome the conversation. I love the constituency. I really am so amazed. I'm from an Irish background on both sides of my family. So being in Durham and seeing all the kind of Celtic, Scottish, Irish stuff, and seeing you can feel the culture still. And it's really encouraging, because I haven't been in this part of Ontario before, but I think this part of Ontario is a part of the country that now has a voice to shape what happens in our nation. And that's why Durham's so important. And I hope that people can have the depth of insight to overlook the fact that I'm here trying to amplify their message in this country to make our country better, and not just look at as, oh, this is someone who doesn't live here. We have bigger issues, and I care about the people in Durham because they're Canadians.
I appreciate you taking the time to talk to Exit 425, to talk to me and meet me here, and just open up a little bit more than maybe you could in a regular setting about who you are and who the United Party of Canada is, and why we need to be paying attention. So appreciate that. So thank you. How can people get in touch with you? You talked about six forum that you're running. So how do we find out about where those are and how to get involved?
Sure. Well, maybe you could post this on this interview on a banner or something when you do play it. It's called, our website is really the epicenter for that information. It's a website that we have designed specifically for the Durham riding. I have a letter on there to the constituency of Durham to explain why I'm here and what I'd like to talk about in terms of the narrative that we need to discuss for Canada. There's also a letter in there explaining to all the freedom fighters why I'm setting up a new party and why I didn't just do that inside the PPC. And that's that's an interesting discussion. It's heartfelt and value based. It's not just political positioning. And so if you go to upcanada.org, you will find a schedule of the locations and times and dates where we'll be speaking. We're also doing other kind of more private meetings with groups across the constituency. And we'll be out putting out some pamphlets and signs. So we'll meet people in the community that way. And we're getting some great engagement with people asking for signs at their house. And I think that's awesome. So the people are open to a new discussion. They're open to a fresh voice in this context. So, And also you can get our information on Election Canada if you want to go through there in terms of how to contact us. And then Facebook and Instagram will have that same information, but you'll find those links on our website.
That's terrific. So once again, thank you for joining me today and taking the time to have this conversation. For all those who are listening or watching, thank you for listening or watching this episode of Exit 425. Please like and subscribe on whatever platform you use. Our mission is to provide substantial information and education that goes where you want, because it's where we live. Exit 425 is a production of Studio 38 Audio, copyright 2024. My name is Steve Ray. If you have questions or would like more information about Exit 425, join our Exit 425 Facebook group, like the Facebook page, check out Instagram, Medium, X, and TikTok, or email me at exit425401@gmail.com. Exit 425, it's where we live.